We'd like to thank our sponsor, Purina Pro Plan, fuel for life. More sporting dog champions feed Pro Plan than any other brand of dog food.
Welcome back to another episode of Save It for the Blind. I'm here with Brian Huber and Jason Koslovich. We're going to talk about California waterfowl's banding over the summer and the right before the season. So, fellas, welcome back to the show.
What's up?
Thanks for having us.
So, where are all the bands and the transmitters at?
All over the place.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. We don't need you finding out, Jeff.
Hey, I've got a couple of them. Hey, so, I mean, in terms of, you know, this year compared to last year, you know, it seems like you guys had some pretty good success this year with Klamath and the airboats and all that. So why don't you guys kind of tell us where you guys were at and how that went?
Exactly where we were at?
Not exactly where we were at, but with Klamath, with all the water, it sounds like you guys were pretty successful up there.
Well, it started with a crew in the Sac Valley. Yeah. We got access to the national refuges that have some pretty good summer water units. And we had a crew that was hard at work. They were on it, moving traps, scouting hard.
There's all swim-in traps?
Swim-in traps, yep. And they did really well. They got, what, 1,100 and something mallards?
Yeah, 1,105 mallards just in the Sacramento Valley.
Oh, wow.
So we haven't done that in quite a few years, just with the lack of summer water and, you know, focusing up on Klamath when we have water up there. It's just a complete game changer for how many birds are up there versus down in the valley now. So,
yeah,
it was nice to see, you know, a big bounce back in the Sacramento Valley, you know, as far as, you know, summer water and molting mallards and some wood ducks, too. So
oh, nice.
We caught a good amount of wood ducks in the swim-in traps, too, in the Sacramento Valley, so...
What's your guys' goal per year to reach? I mean, 1,000 seems like a lot.
So we have a contract with the state through the duck stamp funds, and our contract is to catch 1,000 mallards for the summer.
Okay.
And the goal is, with all the banding throughout the entire state, is to catch 1,000 adult male mallards,
okay,
which with the lack of banding everywhere else, it's pretty tough to reach that goal. But that's kind of like the mark that they set for, you know, to help with the modeling and stuff for the mallards.
Okay. So other than the California waterfowl and some of the fed places, you know, like Sac Refuge or wherever, I mean, who else is doing banding here in California?
They were trying to do some at Grizzly.
Okay.
Grizzly Ranch was trying to do some. I know YOLO was trying to do some.
That's the USGS at Grizzly?
They were actually doing that internally with the state, I think, with some of their seasonals and stuff.
Yeah, they were trying to encourage each refuge to kind of have their own little band.
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's great.
And then I know USGS, I think they were targeting YOLO for the most part and doing a little bit of stuff there. But they're mostly targeting smaller captures or smaller amounts of birds, you know, to try and get transmitters out. So that's kind of the USGS's mission there, is transmitters mostly.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yep.
And I mean, transmitter, I think, is pretty neat, but is it just specifically, you know, USGS doing that? I know you guys have gotten some grants in the past to do that on some birds as well.
Yeah, we put transmitters out on quite a few birds. USGS will give us their transmitters pretty often, just because they can't make it out to the field with us and we're running traps every day. So
they'll be like, hey, here's some transmitters.
Yeah, if you get any adult female pintail, put them out, you know, whatever.
Gotcha.
But they have been definitely the ones who manage all that data.
Yeah.
They have the move bank set up. All the transmitter data goes to their database, right, and then they got the people to crunch the numbers there and do the analyses.
Oh, wow. Obviously you can get a lot more, but I mean, what's the pros and cons to potentially a transmitter on a bird? Pros, I mean, a lot of data.
Obviously. Yeah, I mean, these things are giving off so many data points. I mean, I know some of them are up in the hundreds of thousands of data points, you know, for each transmitter. And it's just that that really localized information. And then, you know, we always, for the most part, we like to put them on hens, right? Because then we can get like the nesting season or nesting success. And you can pretty much tell, you know, when they initiate their nest, when they start incubating, all based off of like the transmitter data. So it's really interesting for that. And then following them along on their molt.
You can tell if they had a successful nest, because you can tell their behavior if, you know, they're having a brood follow them around versus.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like the nest is not successful, they're going to take off. But if they stay localized and stay on one wetland unit, they probably got a brood with them.
Right. Does any idea of the bird with the transmitter on it the longest?
I don't know. No, I'd have to.
How long do
tease
they last,
all that stuff out?
Technically,
3 years is a good one.
Oh wow!
A lot of times it's not. So like early on, they were, I think the first transmitters they put out were 2G service, and then cell carriers stopped providing 2G, and so all those transmitters just went blank. And so they've been trying to keep up with the cell service. So that's knocked a lot off the map. And then you get, like, early on, the solar panels weren't raised, so they were finding out birds were preening their feathers over the solar panels, and the batteries were dying. It's just been trial and error, stuff like that.
Gotcha.
But I think if you can get 3 years out of a bird, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the transmitters do have impacts on the bird, some species more than others. Like widgeon, cinnamon teal, certain species, you put the transmitters on and you can tell, like, they don't like it.
Oh, so some of them get it off and
yeah. Some of them tough it out and make it, but like, and then you stick it on a mallard and they're like, whatever, you know,
so. And pintails seem to be
pintail. They, some do miss. Good. Some throw a fit when you put it on.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Can you tell, like, once the transmitter is on, like, them really stressing out and things like
that? Some don't seem to, some will, like, you put it on them, and we try to put them, a lot of times we'll put them back in the crate just to let them, you know, calm down a little bit before you release them. And sometimes you throw them back in the crate and they're like fighting other ducks and just could care less. They have a transmitter on them. And other times you put them in the crate and they're like panting and like freaking out.
Huh?
So it definitely does have an impact on the bird survival.
Yeah. That's interesting. But, I mean, what's the cost of these things so people get an idea?
They're roughly, I think the latest ones we got were around $1,100 a piece.
A piece?
Yeah. Woo. And then you have the data fees on top of that. But most of them come with a pretty good data plan to start, you know? So only like when you get those older ones that are lasting, then you need to buy some more data for them. But it's pretty reasonable, the data plans. But gotcha. Yeah, they're roughly $1,100 a piece. Yeah.
Wow. I had no idea. That's expensive. Yeah. Some expensive ducks flying around out there.
Yep.
So if someone were to shoot one, the steps on potentially giving it back and what they receive.
Yeah, so we have, you know, you report the metal band like any other band. There should be a thing to put an auxiliary, you know, has an auxiliary marker on it. All the transmitters have either a phone number or an email on it. So you look on the transmitter and it should say, I think, I can't remember what it says now, but should something at USGS.com.
Well, it used to be individual people.
They but like, now it's like
now sound, it's just a generalized, something.
Yeah,
generalized email address that you can email. But it used to, if you get one of the older ones that has a person's name and email on it, they might not work anymore for USGS. You're always welcome to reach out to me or Brian, and we would know who to get a hold of over there. And then, they ask you to return it. They will send you a dummy transmitter to put on a taxidermized bird. And then they'll send you a big laminated map of all the places that bird's been.
Yeah, that's probably the coolest part.
Oh, yeah.
Is the map, you know. But enough with transmitters. Let's go back to our banding numbers and let's hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so the summer banding went really well this year. Like I said, we started the Sac Valley, and then once we got the okay to move up to the Tule Lake Klamath Basin up there, we switched gears and, you know, started doing the night lighting up there. We didn't have any major botulism outbreaks this year. I mean, there was a few, but nothing, you know, I bet it was less than 1,000 or not maybe like around there.
Yeah,
I
don't think they go all day and find like 50 birds and a couple of boats. So it's very memorable.
So that was big. You know, there was a lot of water up there this summer, spread the birds around, which it partly made the trapping difficult, but, you know, it gave us a longer period to trap because last few years we've had to actually stop banding because the botulism got so bad. So we had to, you know, stop banding, and then they would switch gears to picking up the dead birds and stuff. Oh, wow. So, it was great. Overall, I think for Northeastern California, we banded just over 7,000 birds, and that's with us, CWA and Fish and Wildlife Service up there. So the deal that we have up there is, you know, we're contracted with the state to catch mallards. So all the mallards we catch, CWA puts our bands on. Anything else up there that we catch, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the refuge up there puts their bands out. So overall, we caught 7,290 birds.
So when you're doing the night lighting, it's just whatever's in front of you, you can catch it and put it in the crate, and you're going to band
whatever
it.
Kind of duck. Yeah. That's you come across not all like kinds of crazy pelicans. Birds at night. But
Well, we did catch pelicans last year, put some transmitters on them.
Way.
That was a trip.
Was that a trip?
Yeah, it was.
You guys wearing goggles and stuff? And like,
No, the pelicans weren't.
The pelicans were bad. Yeah.
No. We put ibis. I mean, pretty much what are we? Avocets, phalaropes, tiny little shorebirds you see.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. They're like, I mean, they're size of a, you know, freshly hatched chicken. Like, they're small. And they were getting transmitters. And they were doing really well with them. That's just like one of those things where it's like you'd never expect them to. Granted, the transmitters are absolutely tiny.
Yeah.
But, like, I think they put one on a couple years ago. They put one on a phalarope. And, like, the next morning it was in Salt Lake City or something bizarre.
Yeah, crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That is nuts.
Some ibis too.
Yeah,
got a few ibis and transmitters on those.
But we don't go catching those haphazardly. They'll tell us like, "Hey, we need a couple ibis to put transmitters on," and then the first boat will bring back a couple ibis.
And yeah, a lot of that is USGS working with other groups, you know, that they're partnering with to try and, you know, do more research on a broader scale than just waterfowl, you know.
So, gotcha.
But yeah, the number one bird up there is almost always gadwall. So we caught just over 4,000 gadwall. Folks that are probably shooting birds now, they see the red paint on the bands.
Okay.
And so that we get a lot of questions about that. So the reason that we put the, we don't do it, but Fish and Wildlife Service up there does, is they paint all their fresh bands for the year red. So when we're trapping in these ponds and we catch a bird, like the next night we trap in that pond or something and we see a red band, we know that we just banded that bird so we can let it go and we're not harassing the bird and putting it in a crate, you know, any longer than we need to.
Oh, gotcha.
So that's just our way of identifying what we call bad recaptures, you know, recaptures that we just got half from previous banding.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We rotate the same two or three units all summer.
Yeah.
And so come the fourth week, you know, you've already banded 3,000 birds in that, that unit. You're going to catch them.
Yeah, it gets frustrating too towards the end because you're like, yeah, I got, you know, we're trying to catch birds and they're all recaptures and you're like, oh like, man, we trapped this pond out. We got to find a new pond, you know? But what was the other highlight?
Redheads probably.
The ruddy ducks.
Some ruds?
Oh yeah. Landon and his ruddy ducks.
Shout out to Landon.
Yeah. He's the ruddy duck banding king. Yeah, we caught 80 ruddy ducks.
Holy moly.
So that was kind of fun catching those. They're a pain in the butt to catch in the boat too because they dive.
Oh, I bet.
Dip and swim around and stuff. So
the ruds,
number one ruddy banding station in the nation.
Yeah. And then it was the redheads kind of made a big comeback too. 1100 banded redheads up there too.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it's kind of neat. You know, they kind of, they come and go with the water situation. I mean, a couple of years ago we hardly caught any, but prior to that we would catch, you know, probably 800 to 1,000.
Oh, really?
Especially that unit two. When that unit two is good water,
that's
when the redheads show up. They like breeding in there.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then some cinnamon teal, a couple canvasbacks, some widgeon, some pintail. We caught a hooded merganser up there, which was kind of neat.
On Klamath?
Yeah. Yep.
Not many trees around that area, eh?
No, but, you know, we've caught a wood duck or two almost every year up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting.
Actually, I know a guy that just hunted up there recently. They actually shot a wood duck out at Sump 1B.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like, they're around. I mean, they're, you know, there's some wood duck boxes and stuff up there at the refuge, but yeah, I've never, we see them, we were summer banding up there in the swimming traps, and I think we caught a brood up there, so they're definitely up there. Wow. Yeah.
The lesser scop are pretty cool.
Yeah.
We caught six lesser scop ducklings. Yep. So there was a couple of those up there breeding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've never seen that before.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You want to support California waterfowl, go to calwaterfowl.org and check out some of our events. So some of our upcoming events is November 4th, Paso Robles. We have a recruitment and social there. November 5th, we have another recruitment social in Salinas. November 7th is our Galt Lodi Banquet. November 8th is our Butte City Glen Banquet. And then November 13th, our Alamo and Dingville Banquet. So if you want to get involved, support California waterfowl, win some cool stuff, go to calwaterfowl.org and buy your event ticket today.
Yep.
Do you guys ever get into, you know, the Canada geese and helping out with those?
We have in previous years. So the state runs a little banding operation over the summer when the geese are molting. And they'll kind of put a crew together and travel. You know, when they fly the surveys, they get an idea where the good spots are for geese. And then they'll kind of pinpoint some areas in northeastern California. And they do what we call the corral traps, you know. So you set a big fence line kind of going each direction. And then it corrals the birds into a trap.
Okay.
So you get out there in kayaks and sometimes a quad, you know, to keep them off the shore. And then you just kind of push them in with the kayaks into that funnel, into the trap.
Just herd them.
Yeah. And we've done that with the state and also with the Fish and Wildlife Service up there at Klamath. But we don't, you know, we don't set it up. We just
don't have a contract to do it. But if we're free and they need help, we'll show up.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, that's fun. I mean, it's you get a lot of birds and those big old Canada geese, you know, they beat you up pretty good. They put up a pretty good fight. So,
yeah it's funny at night, you know, you come across Canada geese, and if I'm driving, I don't even go anywhere near them. But some of the other boat operators like catching them, and And then you got the catchers on the front trying to wrangle us. You know, they get one Canada goose in the net and it's beating the crap out of them. And they throw it in a crate. And then you're fighting with it back at the banning station. Yeah. I just sit there and laugh the whole time.
What a mess. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But yeah, the technique we use up there, you know, for folks that don't know, is night lighting. And that process is basically you start right when the sun goes down. You want to wait till it's dark. It's better on darker nights. And the basic idea is that you drive around in an airboat at night. You find a duck and you spotlight it. So you have a spotlight in your hand at the driver. You shine it on the bird and it kind of stuns them and slows them down. And then you have a catcher up on the front of your boat with basically a fishing net. And he just scoops them up with the fishing net, puts them in a crate. And then we bring them back to like a banding station, band them and let them go.
Does this surprise you guys sometimes, like by looking at a unit during the day and be like, "And there's not a lot of birds out there," and then you go out there at night and it's just like birds everywhere?
What's really surprising is how sometimes it gets better throughout the night.
Oh, really?
Like you would think there, you got three or four big V8 no muffler airboats that are loud, right? We wear double ear protection. We wear foamies inside and then muffs on the outside because they're so loud. And you think as soon as you fire those things up, everything's going to run to the bushes. But like a lot of times the first run comes back and they each boat has a couple of crates, like, man, it sucks out there. And it's like, all right, who wants to go and round up another crew and go out there? And it's like, there's birds everywhere all of a sudden. And it's, I don't know why, like the noise brings them out. The tulies, they don't like being in the cover at night. I don't know what the deal is, but yeah, sometimes it gets better as the night goes on.
Huh.
Yeah. And it's gone both ways. You know, we'll see pond in the day and it'll just be loaded with birds. And then we go out there at night and we just don't catch anything.
Huh.
And it's gone the opposite way too, where it's like you don't see anything, so you just never know. I mean, those, you know, when those birds are molting, they're taking cover, you know, during the day. They want to hide out. They don't want to be exposed. They can't fly, right? So they're pretty vulnerable. So yeah, it goes both ways.
Do you guys ever do night lighting down here in the Sac Valley, or is there just not really a need for it?
The problem is we don't have our own airboat, or we don't have, you know, access to airboats down here like we do up there. So the refuge up there owns what, 5 or 6 airboats that they kind of cycle through and maintain and keep track of.
Gotcha.
There was one summer where we had a volunteer let us use his airboat. We did a couple nights down on our CWA properties.
Okay.
And it was pretty successful. I mean, we caught over 100 birds at Demerton and Grizzly, and it was fun. So it was kind of a prove the point that, you know, we can do it in other places, just if we had the tools to do it.
SAC Complex used to have a biologist that was pretty gung-ho on night lighting. And so he'd go 4 or 5 nights a year. And sometimes we get the call to help him out on that. And then we've tried like Gray Lodge.
We tried Gray Lodge and never.
Little Dry Creek ones. But you got to have the right units for it. You got to have 100 plus acres. Yeah, you got to have the right vegetation.
Probably harder down here.
You know? We used to have those units, but we just don't see them anymore. You know, that's kind of summer habitat that we used to attract a lot more molting birds. You know, SAC Complex definitely has some. I know. YOLO's really kind of stepping up on their stuff too. So in the future, it'd be neat to do it down at YOLO or something. We talked about it this year, but we were just so busy up in Northeast that it just didn't happen. So
gotcha.
Yep.
Do you guys prefer going up to the Northeast than the banding down here? I mean, a little bit cooler. Or?
It's a different experience. Yeah. I mean the
drive sucks. Driving, we'd go up there every week, 2 nights a week, and you're staying in a hotel, and so that just kind of gets old. But the trapping's so good up there, and then just the crew that they have and the how they mesh with us, it just works out. We all have a good time and we look forward to it. But by the 4th or 5th week, we're like, we're kind of burnt out. So. Yeah.
We're good.
It was actually pretty neat this year. I was able to bring my son out a couple times. My 8-year-old son, you know, up there on the front of the boat, you know, catching birds and hanging out with the crew and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
Man,
he talks about it all the time with his friends and stuff.
That's so freaking cool.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, you guys just kind of wrapped up preseason pintail banding down here. How did that all go right before the season?
It went good. I mean, it started off pretty slow. Some circumstances, you know, how that usually goes is that we have a contract with the state again through duck stamp funds. And we generally are the way we have it broken down. So the state has their banding crew. We have a banding crew. We work together. You know, when we have a big shot, we try and help each other. Generally speaking, the state stays on the west side of the Sac River. So they get, you know, the National Wildlife Refuges, and then we stay on the east side or anywhere else we can find birds. So our contract for that is to catch 500 pintail.
Okay.
And then their goal is to catch 1500 pintail. So a total of 2000 every preseason. Some circumstances happened where they weren't able to get their crew started. And so we were able to go over to the west side and, we caught, what was it, 1,600 birds in 2 weeks or something?
I mean, 1,724 pintail.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. Yeah.
It was like seven trapping days.
Yeah.
So we didn't trap that weekend, but yeah,
seven. We had some amazing shots. Yeah, I think what was our biggest, like 329.
Yep.
329. And
two nets
together.
A two net set, but one shot. Yep.
That's good.
And I think we only had one mortality in that one.
Yeah.
Which is pretty
impressive. We only ever shot three different nets. Yeah. Shot them a couple times each.
How many people were on that big
hole?
We had, I think, eight or nine.
Four
probably.
Or five of us, and then the two. Or okay.
I was going to say it wasn't like four.
No. When we have those big shots, we have to make sure we have enough people, especially on the federal refuges. You know, we have to have all our.
Yeah, we had some help from Fish and Wildlife technicians. So that was
gotcha.
Yeah, there was a solid crew of us every day.
But we had, you know, I got to give a shout out to our crew too. I mean, this whole summer and preseason, you know, we had a returning crew of technicians that did really well, and they were just really trained and. You know, they were gung-ho and they did a really good job for us, you know, so it's so nice having the experienced crew come back and, absolutely. Just get to work and get it done.
We can just go set a net for the first time and not have to worry about training people and making sure.
Yeah, and they probably know what to look for and they know the drill. Just like anything makes it really work well.
Yep. We caught, you know, we also caught some greater white-fronted geese. We caught about 40 of those. We caught a lot more of them, but we just had so many pintail in our nets that we had to let them go because we just didn't have the capacity with crates and time and everything. Handful of shovelers, some widgeon, a couple teal, and a gadwall. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good preseason, so we were pretty happy with that. And then I believe the state went and shot a net or two afterwards and, you know, to get closer to that 2,000 bird goal for pintail.
Like,
so.
Like prior to the season, just, you know, duck numbers in general that you were just seeing. Did you, guys seeing more on the landscape prior to duck season or less or comparable?
There wasn't as much water as normal.
Yeah, I would say that
those
too,
west side refuges were slower, as people have seen on the posts online. They've been slower to float up this year. Calusa was ahead of schedule, I think, with water, but the other two were a little slower. And that's just lack of staffing and funding.
Right.
And I guess some beaver damage, supposedly, is what I've been hearing.
Yeah, I heard there's some water control structures or something.
Yeah, I know this summer there was water like running over Road 68 and something. They probably got a bad culvert or something. It's one of their main delivery ditches is probably caved in or something crazy. So, no fault to them. It's just dealing with managing a
wetland management. Wetland,
There's only one person out there right now, or was there something?
I'm not sure their status. I know they've lost quite a few people, and I think they're having a hard time, you know, getting those places filled up and shut down and all the stuff going on. So,
yeah.
But I mean, what was flooded had birds in it, and obviously the trapping was pretty good. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't, I don't think it was quite as impressive as in years past that I've seen. But
yeah, I think a lot of geese showed up fairly. They didn't show up early, but when they showed up, they were massive.
Oh, and they were concentrated too. You know, there wasn't quite as much water around. And then you get the geese in a unit you're trying to catch ducks in. Well, they're going to take over the roads early, and you got to wait until they leave to go feed in the dry rice. And you know, an hour before sunset, then you got an hour of. And you then know, hoping that the pintail get on the bank.
And it's crazy because you watch the geese leave and then you see the pintail almost just like bomb rush the edge that they were sitting on and kind of take over. They're like, finally, it's our turn to hang out. And
then
here come me and Jason and shoot a net over their heads, you know. Geez. But yeah. Yep. So no, it was good. I mean, I think we had a couple good recaptures. We had one recapture that I had to acid etch the band. And it was, I can't remember how many years old. I think it was 8 or 9 year old pintail.
Oh wow!
And it was banded at the exact same place, pretty much. Was there the same refuge?
Is there a D10 recapture or something weird?
That was a summer, one of the summer bands we had to take an etch, and it was a, I think it was a 10 year old D10 mallard.
That, oh wow!
Yeah, we banded it. Egg salvage bird.
Egg salvage bird.
9 or 10 years old. Yeah. So that was pretty neat. Yeah. Yep. And then there was also a female recapture that was fairly old. I can't remember the details. It was like 8 or 9 years old female, which was pretty, you know, pretty good for a female.
Now with the etching, do you think it's just wear and tear, or is it like water quality?
It's the water quality. Or? Yeah, if it has like the alkaline water, that's where I think we start seeing it just deteriorate.
Like I feel like it's any sand. Birds hanging around sandy banks, stuff like that can kind of.
And it's definitely, we've seen it more in the size 6 bands too. So a lot of folks are going to like the stainless steel bands for all their size 6s, but they're a pain in the butt to put on.
Yeah, we went to that for redheads this year.
Really,
so we did 1,100 of those stainless. They call them ink alloy.
Yeah.
But it's basically stainless.
Gotcha.
And they're a lot harder of a metal than aluminum. So trying to pinch them and make them look right and yeah. be flush Get and not right. sharp. And it takes probably twice as much time to put a band on.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And what are you doing when you're etching them to find the numbers?
It's just a process that you do where you have an acid and you put it in an acid, and then the acid like eats away at the metal to like bring out the imprint marks from mm-hmm. the numbers, because they stamp the band.
Yeah.
And so that stamp like still goes through the metal, and so you can actually pull it out with acid etching it. So it just kind of removes layers, I guess, of the metal to reveal that punch, you know, the stamp. Gotcha. And then it's a process, you know. I do it at my house because we've had bands that we've sent back to the BBL and they never sent them back, right? So that's you know, I had one of our a hunter shot a bird and I was like, oh, I'll send it back to the BBL for you, and then we never got it back. And so it's just kind of it's fairly easy to do if you have the equipment at your house, okay. you know. And so I don't recommend anybody just going and buying acid and splashing around with it. You know, you got to be real careful and do it the right way. But once you do that, you know, it's amazing, you know, how it pulls the numbers off. You know, it just, you put it in the solution, then you just will see it like bubbling,
yeah,
bubbling. And then you can just kind of keep checking the numbers, and then eventually you can read them just I mean, it's amazing how easy it is to see them. Yeah. Once they pop.
My brother has a Gadwall band. I'll have to give it to you.
Yeah.
It's like,
I've probably barely
see anything off it.
Boy, by now I bet I've probably etched 25 to 30 bands, and there's only been one that I wasn't able to get the number off of because it wore so much that it actually wore the spot where the number was off. So it was worn so bad that you couldn't even, the number wasn't even there because it was worn out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
Yep.
Huh. So now we're duck season has started. I mean, do you guys help throughout the season? Like I know you guys have helped out with like elutions and stuff in the past. Is there anything on the horizons?
As far as banding goes, yeah, that's really the only thing during duck season that they do is the elution trapping down in the Delta region. And that you know, 8-10 years ago, there was one spot where they'd catch them, and it was kind of like a thing you go do, you know, just go hang out. Oh. This easy trap, and they're almost guaranteed to shoot a net. It was, you know, show up, bang, catch them, high fives, and head home. And now they got to spread out and try a lot harder for them. So we still try to help out where we can, but it's just, they're here and there, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's hard to get down there and get a successful shot. But they're still going to be trying for that. We do a lot of like updating contracts. The Calusa dinner, it's another thing we should probably talk about. That's coming up December 6th. Me and Brian are both in the committee for that. And all those proceeds go to waterfowl programs. So we help out. That's a big process. Some hunt program stuff.
You guys the chairs now? Who's the chair of that?
Chelsea Rathjen.
Yeah. Okay, awesome.
Yeah. She helps out at all of our dinners,
One of our biggest dinners, that Blackhawk and
Gridley,
and I think Fresno's back up there as well. So
yep. And then some hunt program stuff, the college camps.
Yep. Looking forward to that. We got two coming up, one next month, which is crazy, and then the other one in January. So.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get all of our banding data in, and with the government shutdown, you know, there's problems on the banding portal site, and so I can't turn in some of our data because there's nobody there to help with the process. So if you shoot a band, report it, it'll eventually get turned in once this government shutdown gets all worked out. And then, you know, I'm busy right now trying to get all the wood duck projects in. So the wood duck season's over. We're trying to collect all that data and get it published, you know, for the magazine. So if you have new wood duck boxes, you have an old project, new project, you have any kind of data, send it our way and we'll get you in the magazine for the spring edition of our magazine.
And can you guys speak to the importance of actually reporting your band opposed to just putting it on your lanyard and not reporting it?
Well, that's the whole purpose of them really survival rates. I mean, you get migrational patterns and stuff like that, but we have transmitters and we know all that stuff works for years, but keeping track of survival rates and hunter harvest and, you know, how that's changing throughout the years with droughts and good water years and hunting pressure and just changes on the landscape is important to updating the models. You know, they call it adaptive harvest management for a reason. It's adaptive. We try to stay on top of the big changes and adjust our bag limits accordingly. And, you know, some people are afraid to report their bands because it might lead to a reduction in bag limits. But if you look what just happened with the pintail,
right,
you know, the harvest data was suggesting it doesn't have an impact on the population numbers. So it actually got us a chance to shoot more pintail. Yeah. So just report your bands. And for once, you get a little insight into where your bird came from.
Yeah, I mean, I've always reported because I think that's the coolest thing. Like, is this bird 6 years old? Is it 10 years old?
Right.
Where was it banded? Was it banded in Canada or California or whatever? But yeah, I talked to some folks, but they have that concern. Like, oh, I don't report my stuff because X, Y, and Z. And you just shake your head like, come on.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, cool. Just want to say thank you guys so much for coming on. And please report your bands and go to that Calusa dinner to support the waterfowl programs. What's the date of that?
December 6th.
December 6th.
And any rice farmers out there, our rice levy program is open for enrollment. So if you got rice levies and you want to provide some nesting habitat on them potentially, check out CWA's website. It's under the conservation tab. Encourage you to apply. It's a cool program and you could use some more enrollments. So.
Go to calwaterfowl.org. What type of prices are we giving folks?
We did a fixed rate this year, and I should know this offhand, but I don't. I think it was 80 or 85 cents per linear foot of levee. So you got a big field. It adds up.
To leave it and not.
Leave the vegetation standing on the levee from the previous growing season.
Right on. Yep. Sweet. Perfect. Well, thank you, guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.